case on the Southern Panel's argument calendar today is Evaristo Garcia versus James Serenda, director, former director of the NDOC. All right, are you ready to proceed, counsel? Okay, go ahead, Ms. Smith. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you, Your Honor.
Good. Welcome to the Supreme Court.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Emma Smith on behalf of petitioner appellant Evaristo Garcia, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. At Evaristo Garcia's trial, Betty Graves undermined the defense by testifying that the prime alternate suspect, Giovanni Garcia, was not the shooter. She was the only independent witness to do so. We now know she gave a prior inconsistent statement on a pivotal issue, her description of that shooter. Armed with that information, the defense would have been able to impeach Ms. Graves and undermine her credibility and reliability. They would have been able to resuscitate an otherwise compelling defense in the face of a weak state case. It is not disputed that the state did not disclose this evidence to the defense before trial. The state therefore violated its Brady obligations. Starting with suppression, which both goes to the merits and to good cause to overcome any procedural defaults, there are two questions. Did those who assisted in the investigation have possession of these reports, and were they disclosed to the defense? The answer to both is easy. Again, it's not disputed that the defense didn't have them, and it can't seriously be disputed that the Clark County School District Police Department assisted in this investigation. They were the first on the scene. They interviewed witnesses. They stopped a suspect. They wrote reports. They assisted. The prosecution therefore had a duty to turn these reports over to the defense and did not do so. And these reports were material. Again, Betty Graves was the only independent witness to say that Giovanni Garcia was not the shooter. And at the evidentiary hearing in the district court, defense counsel David Figler explained why she was so important and why that testimony was so important. The defense was that was misidentification, that someone else had done this. And there was a great deal of evidence that pointed to Giovanni. He started the fight that resulted in the shooting. He called gang members to come back him up. On the night of the shooting, there were 20 phone calls between him and Manuel Lopez, who owned the gun, who went back to try to retrieve the gun, and who had worked at the location where the gun was recovered. A detective testified that there were witnesses who said that people were yelling at the scene that Giovanni had a gun. Crystal Perez initially affirmatively identified him as the shooter, though she later walked that back. But there was a great deal of evidence pointing to Giovanni, and that was the defense. In contrast, there was not a lot of evidence pointing to Evaristo. It really came down to two witnesses, both of whom were members of the same gang as Giovanni, which Evaristo was not a member of, and they were looking out for themselves. The first is Jonathan Harper, and about 2 weeks after the shooting in this case, he was shot in the head by Giovanni's brother. He did not implicate Evaristo in this crime until after that shooting, and he suffered brain damage as a result of that shooting. In the case concerning Jonathan Harper's shooting...
Well, the evidence did indicate, did it not, that Evaristo's fingerprints, at least two of them, were on the murder weapon. That's a little more than no evidence.
So the fingerprint, there was one fingerprint and a palm print. And the fingerprint, which the fingerprint analyst recognized, was in an unusual position.
I thought that there were three fingerprints, one unidentified and two associated with Evaristo.
That's correct, Your Honor. There were two associated with Evaristo.
You mentioned a palm print.
Oh, I'm sorry. One was a fingerprint and one was a palm print. It was the webbing in between the fingers.
Okay.
And so the actual fingerprint, though, was in a spot where it couldn't have been placed there while the gun was being fired. It's the right ring finger in a 2 o'clock position on the left side of the gun. And so you can't get your finger there while shooting the gun. So the fingerprint just shows he held the gun.
That's the unidentified fingerprint?
No, that's the one that it matches him. And
I thought there were two that matched him.
The other is the webbing, and that is in the back of the gun all the way up at the top. But really what that evidence shows is that he held the gun at some point, which is not disputed. They passed the gun around.
What was the location of the third finger? Because the one thing that I was intrigued by when I read the facts of this case is whether Jose could have been legitimately associated with or tested for that remaining fingerprint, and if so, would it have made any difference if that fingerprint was located in a similar position as one of Evaristo's fingerprints? It may not have made a difference. I appreciate the point that you made about the witness's testimony, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure where that gets us, because I've been trying to think through how that connects Jose to being a possible suspect in this case. Mr. Figler is a pretty detailed lawyer. I'm a little surprised that he didn't spot the fact that the school district's participation in this investigation was admittedly noted in Metro's documents. So why wasn't there a request there? We say, you know, we get into a discussion about this being a Brady violation, but arguably at least the existence or the participation of the school district police department was included in this, in the information that was provided. Could you comment on some of the things I've been just jabbering about?
I'm going to take the last part first.
Okay.
So it can be both true that defense counsel was ineffective and that the state violated Brady. It's not one or the other. Mm-hmm. And defense counsel, though, here there was a discovery request that asked for all witness statements and for all police reports in the actual or constructive possession of the district attorney or Metro or any other law enforcement agency. And Mr. Figler testified that that should have covered the school district police reports here. So he did ask for them. And turning to Jose Bernal, the fact that he was stopped at the scene and only excluded by Graves, who we now know is not reliable, alone makes him an alternate suspect. But really, that's not the focus of our materiality argument. Graves was important, and Mr. Figler explained this at the hearing. She was important because she was used strategically by the state to make the point that Giovanni wasn't the shooter. And that was the defense. There was all this evidence that pointed to Giovanni. That was the defense, and it didn't work because of Ms. Graves, because she was impartial and they had absolutely nothing to impeach her with. And she got up there and undercut the defense. So if they had been able to impeach her, and particularly her memory and her reliability about the shooter, they would have impeached the exclusion of Giovanni, and then this defense, which was quite compelling, but it had this missing piece.
So how would they have used the fact that Ms. Graves excluded yet another person, Jose Bernal, to somehow impeach her exclusion of Giovanni as a suspect as well?
It's really the differences in her description. So in the initial description, she describes the suspect as having dark skin, as having a mustache, as having a medium build. The mustache is never repeated again. The dark skin is never repeated again. And then at trial, he's heavy set. So it's impeachment.
At trial, what?
She testified that he was heavy set instead of having a medium build. So it's really that they would have been able to dig into these inconsistencies, which show that perhaps her memory of the shooter wasn't as strong as she asserted that it was, because she's giving inconsistent statements. This would have been...
She did that on her own, did she not? Didn't she testify that she forgets many things?
She testified generally that she forgets things, but then affirmatively stated that Giovanni was not the shooter and did not profess any confusion or doubt on that point. And that is the point that the defense needed to impeach. That is the reason she was so pivotal here, is because she said, and she's the only impartial one who said, that Giovanni isn't the shooter. And there's all this other evidence pointing to him, but she was disinterested. She had no reason to lie, unlike everyone else in the case. She had no reason to lie, and she got up there and said, it's not Giovanni. That cuts the defense out at its knees. So the importance here is that it would have bolstered the defense. And this was not a particularly strong case. It hinged on...
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you about not a particularly strong case, but I'll throw in with you, the facts are all over the place. a lot to argue for both sides. But one of the things, and the reason this case is being argued, is the legal question that exists here. And I'm not sure that the briefs adequately addressed or captured the distinction between the standard that's applicable for our review of the document request. Was it specific? Was it general? Should we abandon that test and go with the test the U.S. Supreme Court seems to follow for all requests? Does it make a difference? Why should we address that? Shouldn't we address that in this case?
So this was a specific request. It requested witness statements, including those contained in police reports. And Betty Graves was a witness. It also requested police reports from any law enforcement agency. And the Clark County School District Police Department is a law enforcement agency.
I thought the request was just for police reports from, I think it was three different agencies and any other law enforcement agency.
Yes, exactly. I
didn't hear the request including witness statements. I just heard it was police reports.
Oh, I'm sorry. So it was, I believe it was eight parts. The sixth part was witness statement, and the eighth part was police reports.
Thank you for the clarification.
Mm-hmm. So it was both. It should have been covered under either.
The state has an obligation separate apart from any request from the defense to provide the defense with all law enforcement reports related to the case. Yes?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And if that's, doesn't that make that a general request? I mean, I think it's the Fifth Circuit Anderson case that said, look, a specific request is one that explicitly identifies the material to be disclosed and is objectively limited in scope. It's not just any and all law enforcement reports from any agency that was involved.
I mean, this also, again, included the witness statements, and she was a witness. I mean, short of listing every witness who the state eventually noticed and asking for their statements, I don't know how that part could be more specific. But I mean, I would submit that the difference between the reasonable possibility and the reasonable probability standard in this case is not dispositive. We can meet either. Even if it is the reasonable probability standard, this evidence is material under that standard, which, as Your Honor pointed out, is the federal standard. So yes, the reasonable possibility standard is lower, but under either standard, we can prevail. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, well, thank you for your input and your argument.
May it please the court, Talene Panduct for the respondent, State of Nevada. This appeal comes to you in the form of a procedurally barred petition, and it was both time-barred as well as successive. And the claim, the factual and legal claim, was available before the time of default, as well as during the time the first petition was filed. While the state did not know there was a Clark County School District Police Department report, the state conceded that they did not know that such a report existed. Metro did not have that report in their files. While we did not have the report, this claim, all the evidence and information was available in the 911 dispatch logs that were provided in discovery. So the CAD report, as well as the officer's report listing all of the Clark County School Police Department officers, was made available in discovery way back in the beginning to prior counsel.
The CAD report is just going to show who responded. It doesn't necessarily follow that each person wrote a report, that there's corresponding police reports.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It did not indicate at all that a report was done. And we had no idea that the Clark County School Police would have done a report. We knew they came out to the scene, but most Metro officers don't even write a report. You know, if a detective is assigned to the case, mm-hmm. they submit a report. But what I meant to say was that the information that was contained in that call log, so it starts at 9:02, and at 9:02 p.m., it says school PD initiated the call. Then at 9:05 p.m., school PD has one at gunpoint. Then at 9:07, school PD out with possible suspect. At 9:13 p.m., school PD has possible one suspect in custody, one eyewitness there for one-on-one. Then they provide a description that's already been referred to by the appellant. And at 9:22 p.m., it says, and this is all in the CAD report, that out with school PD one-on-one negative. So all the information was provided to the defense, just not the name Betty Graves and the name Jose Banal. So all of this information was available, and so this claim was available prior to the time of default. And that, of course...
But let me ask you a question. I mean, your point seems to be that they could have followed up on that because it was in the CAD report.
Yes.
But your position is we didn't even know there was a report there. So why don't they have that same benefit, that they would have not known there was any report to follow up on? The difference being that you have an obligation that you constructively possess law enforcement reports. They don't have that obligation. That's why there's the general, what I was referring to earlier, obligation by the state to provide everything, whether they ask or not.
Absolutely. And it's the state's contention that this was a general request. So the request was for witness statements and for police reports, but it was general. It would have been specific had it said Clark County School District Police Department reports. And Mr. Figler did request, when he came onto the case, he made several specific requests of me. He and I came onto the case at the same time. We came in 7 years after the murder, and we tried the case that same year in 2013. And I honored all of his specific requests, and I gave all of that to him. He also testified at the evidentiary hearing he didn't know about the report, or he would have requested it. But I don't...
go ahead. So let me ask you, you're saying the descriptions in the CAD, so the mustache, all that is in the CAD, but it's not attributed to Ms. Graves in the CAD.
Exactly.
And that's the gravamen of the claim.
Right? And what I wanted to address, and there's, first of all, with constructive possession, one of the cases that they rely on for constructive possession, obviously there's Kyle's. Kyle's just says police. It doesn't specify different police agencies, but the case they really rely on is the State versus Bennett case. But the State versus Bennett case was completely different from our case. They're trying to make it sound as though the Clark County School Police Department did so much investigation on this case, but I wanted to draw attention to what really happened. I mean, this was a schoolyard brawl. Everyone is running and screaming and going everywhere. Every single person that knew something about this case, they're going into cars and running and getting away. They're all gang members or associates of gang members, and they leave. So Betty Graves is one of the only people that's left, you know, people that work at the school. And Jose Banal was never actually linked as an alternate suspect. This was just a mere presence. He was in an area, wasn't even on a street that was relevant to this case. So the shooting is on Washington. The gun is found on Parkhurst. Mr. Banal is on Strawberry or Shrubbery. He's not even on the same street where the gun is found or where the shooting occurred. And one thing that Betty Graves was clear about is the fact that she wasn't a good witness. I disagree with the defense that Betty Graves is not the star witness that they're trying to make her out to be. She never identified the defendant. She was actually shown an 8x10 picture of the defendant, and this is at the first volume of the appendix, page 161. She was shown this picture of the defendant and didn't identify him as the shooter. She even misidentified that he went to the school there, which he did not. So Betty Graves gave a voluntary statement in a handwritten form. She gave a recorded statement, and her description, it was general. It was exactly as stated by appellant, but the one thing that she was sure about was that he had real short black hair. And even jurors asked that question, and she was very clear and repeated that that's what she remembered. And Jose Banal had longer, bushier hair, and so she said that that wasn't the suspect. But to answer defense counsel's point as well, Betty Graves never identified anybody. She never identified the defendant in the photo. She never identified him at trial. She never identified the shooter. She knew Giovanni because, as stated in her witness statements, he was always a troublemaker. He was the school troublemaker, and that's why she knew him. But Betty Graves wasn't the only person that excluded Giovanni. Betty Graves testified about the same thing that everybody testified at this trial, that he was wearing the gray hoodie, that she saw the shooting. Sometimes they heard things, you know, shots. Sometimes they saw something. But nobody identified the defendant except for Jonathan Harper and Edshel Calvillo. Those were the only two. And Edshel Calvillo was just, he got the confession. But Betty Graves wasn't the only person to exclude Giovanni. We had that same, so there's a picture of Giovanni. We showed every single witness Giovanni's photograph. And there were numerous witnesses that excluded Giovanni as being the shooter. And even Crystal Perez got on the stand and admitted that she lied. She said that it was Giovanni Garcia but because she wanted it to be him, because she didn't like him, they were from rival gangs. And so she admitted that she lied, but she excluded Giovanni. Gina Marquez excluded Giovanni. Melissa Gamboa, who identified the defendant at preliminary hearing, excluded Giovanni. And most importantly, the fingerprints excluded Giovanni and Manuel Lopez. We had the gun analyzed, and the gun was compared. Those prints on the gun were compared to Giovanni and Manuel Lopez's prints, and their prints weren't located on the gun at all. And to answer your question with regard to the weapon, it was the testimony of Alice Macio that the webbing, that's what she considered a partial palm print, was in the location right where you would be in a firing position to fire that gun. And I actually have a picture of that as well that I brought. And then they were in two different locations. There was a fingerprint that counsel talked about. So here, this is where the webbing was. And here is the fingerprint. See, they list L1, L2, L3. So
could you, counsel, tell us what that is for the what exhibit?
This is the fingerprint examiner prepared this. And it just showed the location of the fingerprints.
Do you have a number where it is in the appendix?
No, I do not. I just brought it. It was the only thing there was to show. Anyway, so she also testified, and what was important about this evidence from Alice Maceo was she testified about overlapping or overlay. And she testified that if someone else's handprint was placed on top of Evaristo Garcia's handprint, that she wouldn't have been able to discern the ridge detail and be able to identify and compare the print. So there was huge significance to this fingerprint analysis identifying the defendant. And as she also testified that the handprint was in that one location, the fingerprint was his right ring finger, and that was upside down. And she testified that that could be consistent with placing it in the toilet tank because the gun was found upside down in the toilet tank. But I wanted...
Let me ask you, if I could, going back to Chief Justice Hardesty's question that opposing counsel has asked. Let's assume that we find that the documents in question were in the constructive possession of the state and therefore they were not turned over as they should have been, and that they were favorable. There was something in there that arguably the defense could have used at trial. Getting to the, was it a specific request and a general request? First question, should we continue to distinguish those things in Nevada in line with the minority of states, or should we adopt, as the Chief said, the standard set forth by the U.S. Supreme Court in Bagley, which is just reasonable probability for any of those type requests? And if not, if we stay with what we have, was this specific or general and why?
I think this was a general request because no one requested, this discovery request in this motion was just for any and all police reports. It wasn't specifically requested from the Clark County School District Police Department. And the only case that talks about an outside agency being in the state's constructive possession was Bennett, but it was very different. What the Utah police did in Bennett was very different than what was done in this case. So in Bennett, they got the confession in Utah, they did a search warrant in Utah and executed that warrant, and they obtained a lot of evidence that was actually admitted at trial. Here, the Clark County School Police were just there for some other infraction, you know, with the school, and they called the police, but Metro was there right away. They got there almost immediately, and the school police didn't actually witness any handwritten statements. They didn't actually conduct any interviews that were recorded. It was Metro that did all of that. And so in the Bennett case, they were much more involved in Utah than they were here in this case. And I think that's a huge distinction. But I do agree that the standard here would be reasonable probability, and I think that is the right standard. I think it should be, because in this particular case, Betty Graves, this wouldn't have changed anything. This case was decided based on Jonathan Harper and Edshel Calvillo. These witnesses knew him. They knew him well. That's how they were able to identify him. You know, went to trial 7 years after the murder. That's when it actually went to trial. And so even Melissa Gamboa could no longer identify him at trial. And so the evidence from Betty Graves and all of this stuff that the defense is bringing up is really irrelevant to what was actually relied upon in finding this defendant guilty. And I would also like to draw attention to the order of affirmance. The order of affirmance by this court on direct appeal, it talks about the evidence from Jonathan Harper, Edshel Calvillo, the gun being found in the toilet tank. It talks about the fingerprint results. And then it talks about how numerous people identified somebody with this gray hoodie. Numerous people in addition to Betty Graves. We had every witness testify about the same stuff that Betty Graves testified to, but nowhere in your order of affirmance was Betty Graves even mentioned, because she just doesn't matter. And she never was going to be this great witness. But in answer to your previous question, because I'm going to run out of time, in answer to your previous question about diligent investigation by the defense, the point I was making was that it is important that we consider that this evidence was reasonably available to the defense. And the cases cited by the defense, well, obviously there's the Stees case, but they also rely on Amato, that Ninth Circuit case. And the difference in Amato was that that was a probation violation report that was not provided to the defense, and they had no idea of knowing that that person was a gang member convicted of robbery. They had no idea as to any of that. And so the evidence was really important in that case, and they couldn't have discovered it on their own. And that was the point that I was trying to make with the catalogs, is that information was there, and it could have been sought.
But we kind of treat police reports a little bit differently. Police reports are in the state's wheelhouse, and the state is in the best position to reach out and talk to agencies and secure those. So here, the fact that the state wasn't really even aware that there was a report, I don't know, that puts them on, do you think that puts them on completely separate footing? Like, you should have known, but we didn't.
Only because their investigator got the reports, she just sent a letter, and she got them within 30 days. Mm-hmm. So it was easily obtained. But regardless, it wasn't favorable. The reports weren't favorable because Jose Benal was just there. He was merely present, and that's not enough. And if Betty Graves had said, Jose Benal is the shooter, yes, that would have been favorable. But she didn't say that.
Yes, so is your position, pretty much. If we stuck with the old standard and we say, hey, it was specific, there's a reasonable possibility, Ms. Graves could have been impeached and was impeached with this information, at the end of the day, you're saying none of that mattered. Even if Ms. Graves was impeached,
it wouldn't have made a
difference. There's so much evidence that it doesn't make a difference here.
Because we never would have solved this case without, I mean, Sal Garcia shooting Jonathan Harper in the head, that's the only reason we're even here today. Because we never would have known that Evaristo Garcia did this, but for Jonathan Harper then telling the police, it was an open case for months. It would just never have been solved. And so it wasn't favorable and it wasn't material. And I would also note that the defense argued they had four alternate suspects that they argued heavily in closing argument. The jury was aware of all of that. And a lot of the cases are talking about evidence that was, first of all, more than one piece of evidence. And a lot of it was about informants, where they got up there and testified untruthfully.
Let me interrupt you for a moment, because it just jogged my memory when you said more than one piece of evidence. My understanding was that what was not disclosed was a CC school district police incident report,
yes.
Not separate witness statements.
Correct. There were
no witness statements from Ms. Graves. It's just what was contained in the police report about
yes.
what she said.
Yes, there wasn't a separate witness statement. And there was a second report that was like five lines long that sort of related back to that with no real extra information.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I know you got 11 seconds. A police report that can, an officer taking a statement from somebody still, would you consider that a witness statement?
A handwritten report. Statement. Oh, you mean getting a verbal statement?
The police officer says, I spoke to Joe Blow, they told me X. And so because I want witness statements, would you consider
I don't
that?
Consider it the same, actually. Okay. I think it would be different because it's not documented. It's not something that's written down or recorded. And, okay. Thank you for your time.
Any other questions for counsel?
No, thank you, Chief.
Okay, thank you.
Just a few points, and I'll start with the discovery request. What it asked for was copies of statements given by any state witness on any case, specifically including any reports of said information provided, prepared by any law enforcement agency. So it was asking for reports of statements, which would cover the reports here. The materiality here is that Betty Graves was important to the defense. She was used by the state to undermine the defense theory. So respondents, you know, put forward that she was not important to their case, but she was used strategically, and David Figler testified to this. She was used strategically by the state to undermine the defense, because the defense was that Giovanni was the shooter. So the discussion about Jose Benal is a bit of a red herring. Yes, he was potentially an alternate suspect, but the main point is that she gave a prior inconsistent statement, and with that information, the defense would have been able to impeach her.
So what evidence did the defense point to and argue to the jury that provided a basis for the jury to conclude that Giovanni was the shooter?
He was the one who started the fight. Mm-hmm. He called his fellow gang members to the scene to assist him in the fight. Mm-hmm. There were 20 calls between him and Lopez was the owner of the gun who went back to try to get it from a site where he had worked. Mm-hmm. There were people who told the police, and Detective Mong testified to this at trial, that people at the scene were yelling, "Giovanni has a gun." All of that evidence points to Giovanni. In contrast, all we have is Harper and Calvillo pointing to Evaristo. They're the two at trial who pointed to Evaristo. They are gang members. Calvillo had lied in the Jonathan Harper case at the behest of Giovanni's brother in order to protect the gang. He didn't implicate Evaristo until after Giovanni was arrested. Harper didn't implicate Evaristo until after Giovanni's brother shot him in the head. These were not disinterested witnesses. This was a real defensible case. The jury acquitted Mr. Garcia of conspiracy to commit murder. They did not convict him of first-degree murder. They convicted him of second-degree murder. The trial court recognized that this wasn't the strongest case that had ever appeared before her. There was room here to defend it.
Let me interrupt. So just to be clear, even if the report had been available, the defense did not intend to assert that Jose was the shooter, did they?
Well, they couldn't have intended that because they didn't know about Jose, but the point is that...
I mean, it didn't sound like, from what I saw in Figler's testimony, he was not going to contend that Jose was the shooter or that Jose would have been an alternate suspect. He was going to contend instead that Graves' statement about Giovanni, that he wasn't the shooter, was impeached.
That is absolutely the main thrust of the argument, yes, Your Honor.
I think I understand your argument.
Thank you.
Do my colleagues have any questions?
Thank you.
Do you have anything else you want to finish?
No, we would just ask that the court reverse the denial of the petition here. Thank you.
I'd like to compliment counsel on your briefing and your excellent arguments today. Thank you very much for assisting the court in deciding this case. We'll be in recess.